So sisters and brothers, we have today the great message of Isaiah. He was hoping that this king, they had a string of kings that were despots. They were miserable people. They didn't care about their people. They were just in it for their own good. And so he saw in this new king some hope, Ahaz. And he wanted to say to them that there could be a new light. So in the midst of this darkness, in the midst of this God-forsaken rule, there is some chance, some hope that we might have someone who will care for us. They transfer that, of course, to many people when they're reflecting on Isaiah, to Jesus, and say that in some sense he was saying that, but he was also saying this. And that is, at the time, which we just read in Matthew's gospel, at the time, John had just been captured and taken into prison. And so it would be normal for his disciples, and Jesus was a disciple of John, to run, but he didn't run. He went right into the land of Bethany, to the place where he had been captured. And he began to preach and to teach with great authority. He said he cured and he taught and he preached. So he did it knowing that he was at risk, but he did it because he felt now that he was that light. That light in the darkness of the captivity of his great cousin. And so that's the one thought that goes back and forth and links, I think, Isaiah today to the great gospel of Matthew. And in the middle of that, there's a great prayer for unity, because this is Christian Unity Week when we're trying to gather people. We're going to have a little luncheon for our neighboring Christian communities just to pray with them and support them and to see that we have much more in common than we have apart. The thing that strikes me about that gospel that I would like to share with you today, though, is not so much about Nephthali and the darkness and the connection between Isaiah and Matthew, but the call. Dan is going to sing a song in just a little bit, right at the offertory, I think, called The Call. And it strikes me that here's this guy, he comes up to two fishermen. And he says, come and follow me. Now, these are not little guys, you know, kind of wandering around looking for something to do in life. I mean, they're hardworking fishermen. Matthew emphasizes by saying they immediately leave their nets and follow him. Peter and Andrew, tough guys, went right with him. And then he goes along and he finds two other apostles, disciples to be later, John and James, and he says, follow me. And they not only leave their boat, they leave their father high and dry, and they follow him. So here are four people who somehow find an attraction. They become followers. They become disciples. John Shea, this great mentor of mine and a good friend, says this about that. A disciple, he says, is merely a fascinated person who desires to know and to do what they see in another. Doesn't that make sense? You know, you meet somebody someday, you know, you look like a big guy, so you're probably a guy that works out. Okay, well, you go into a gym, and you see some guy in the corner, and he's working out. You know, you want to maybe mimic this guy, don't you? Do you ever do that? Do you ever see people have a little more fire, and you want to be, that's what I thought. Okay, I'm not going to mess with you. He said, a disciple is merely a fascinated person who desires to know and to do what they see in another. Then he says, they gravitate and they learn. They gravitate and they learn. And then he says, this Jesus that called those four men who immediately left their nets, their boat, and their father, is forthright energy. Energy fascinates. Listen to this, folks. Energy fascinates because in the polar opposite of the universal trait, it stands against timidity. Does that make sense? I think most of us, for the most part, are not forthright energy. I think most of us kind of say, well, you know, I'm comfortable. I'm okay. I'm not going to stick my neck out, you know? But we're not attractive, and no one follows. Somehow, this Christ was so powerful. His energy was so strong. Whatever it was that was in that man was so attractive that people were willing, fascinated, attracted, desirous to leave everything and to follow. Let's think about that for a moment. Who in your life makes you say, I'd like to know a little bit more about that person? You ever meet those kinds of folks? What's inside that that gives you that desire? What do you see in people that makes you a little hungry to get to know them, to follow them, to be attracted to them, to want to mimic them, fascinated by them? Well, I had the great privilege yesterday. I flew out Friday morning and went to the wake of Sergeant Shriver. Now, most of you are too young to even know who he was. He was 95, so he was an old man. But Sergeant, in the days of John Kennedy, was his brother-in-law, married to Eunice Shriver, Maria Shriver, Schwarzenegger's mother and father. They were there during the time of the administration of John Kennedy, and following that, of President Johnson. And what he was asked to do was to create the Peace Corps. And so he went out literally with this incredible fire, and he changed the face of America. He got young people so excited, so interested, that they were willing to leave this comfortable country and to go out into the hinterlands of the world, into the deepest parts of the world, in the most impoverished nations, and make a difference. Not doing necessarily gigantic things, but doing small things with such heroism that it changed lives and changed their life. That's what happened. And then after that, he was asked to develop the War on Poverty. He was asked to develop a program of taking care of the poor within the United States of America. He did that thing for legal response to the poor. He had all kinds of initiatives. He was an indomitable spirit. And the only way I got to know him is that his program, his strength, was daily mass. Every day. Every day, Sergeant Shriver was at mass. His son, Anthony, said, the first thing, when he and his dad would go into a hotel, the first thing he'd ask, where's the church and what time? What's the schedule for mass tomorrow? Not so sure that everyone asked that question. At least not the first question. But that's what he did. He had that inner strength within him every day. And he read, and he was challenged, and he challenged. And he was this extraordinary person. He ran with a candidate who he knew would never win the election, George McGovern. Didn't have a Chinaman's chance to win the election. But he felt he needed to serve this nation. And he was willing to do that, willing to stand, willing to sacrifice, willing to make a difference. Yes, he was. So there it was yesterday. And President Clinton spoke, and Vice President Biden spoke, and kids spoke, and Maria spoke, and everyone, and it was incredible when you listen to these things. But the thing that struck me was this little pamphlet. He's got a great portrait of himself. He's a handsome guy. That's Sarge in his very young years. This is what it says. He was at Yale University in 1994. So he had been in his 80s. He was not a young man when he said this. Yale University. It was the school that he graduated from law. That was his alma mater. So he was giving a class day at Yale, May 1994. He says this: And I have one small word of advice. But that advice is going to be tough. This is my advice to you. Here's this old man speaking to these young college students. He says, break your mirrors. Yes, indeed. Shatter the glass. In our society that is so self-absorbed, begin to look less at yourself and more at each other. How about that, all you beautiful people? I know that'll be a sacrifice. Shatter your mirrors. Look at each other. We are so self-absorbed. So many people. Talent, wealth, blessing, gifts. For what? For gain. That's for what? For themselves. For myself. Sergeant Shriver says, shatter your mirrors. Learn more about the face of your neighbor and less about your own. You have, listen to this line, you have such a chance. Oh, how I wish I were you. Here's an 80-year-old man looking at these young folks and say, oh, I wish I were you. I can't say that. I don't want to go back if you paid me. But Sergeant wanted to do that. His life was so full. His energy was so unbounded. His care and his love for the poor was so strong, he wanted to start all over again. He saw in young people this incredible opportunity. He was that person called forthright energy. And he attracted hundreds of thousands of people to follow him. How about that? This is what he says at the end of that. I hope you remember to believe in things until you die. Hope you remember to be guided by beliefs powerful enough to change this world. I hope you remember all of the various things that had happened over these last years. The Peace Corps, Head Start, Special Olympics. They teach us a way of waging peace. You will get more satisfaction from having improved your neighborhood, your towns, your state, your country, your fellow men and women, than you'll ever get from your muscles, your figure, your automobile, your house, or your credit rating. There it is, folks. How do we follow Christ? Well, first we've got to know him. So catch the fire. That's what we do. That's why we're here. To catch that every week. But then, to turn that around and make a difference. You know, I thought about that great line, I wish I were you. I thought about it all night. I read all on my way back in the plane. We had 65 young people from Windward on that plane, and they were on fire. They'd just come back from Washington, and I read Dietrich Bonhoeffer's biography, and it was a wonderful read, 6 hours. But I thought to myself, you know, I wish I'd paid attention to Sergeant Shriver. I wish I'd have paid attention to a person in the gospel that we read today like Jesus Christ much earlier in my life. Don't miss it, folks. It's the secret. Now, you may not have President Clinton. You may not want him, but you may not have President Clinton at your funeral. You may not. But you may make a difference. It's costly. It's very costly. So be careful. Be careful what you pray for. Because it's a demanding, demanding, and difficult challenge. But my sisters and my brothers, it's the only way. Amen.